Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. According to U.S. health statistics, 4 in 5 women will give birth to a child at some point in their lives. As an unrelated comparator, over the lifespan, 1 in 8 men will eventually develop prostate cancer. These statistics are very general and do not portend future anatomic or health problems. But childbirth, surgery, or other medical treatments for abdominal or pelvic cancers may lead to an overall condition known as pelvic floor dysfunction. By some estimates, up to a quarter of women experience some type of pelvic floor dysfunction, defined as urinary or fecal incontinence, pain or discomfort, or some form of activity limitation. What can be done about it? Well, as the causes and anatomy involved can be multifactorial and complex, therapies involve multiple modalities. My guest today, Becky Wilcox, is one of very few certified pelvic rehabilitation practitioners in Oklahoma. Today we'll talk about the definition and causes of pelvic floor dysfunction and how it can be addressed. Many patients are reluctant to talk about symptoms associated with pelvic floor dysfunction, and health providers are equally reluctant to ask about them because of perceptions that such conditions are difficult to treat. As you'll learn today, there's good news out there as we destigmatize and recognize these conditions and more help becomes available. Becky Wilcox, physical therapist and certified pelvic rehabilitation practitioner, based at PT of Tulsa, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Becky Wilcox, welcome to Medical Monday.
I appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
Tell us what pelvic floor dysfunction is.
Well, it's kind of an umbrella term for so many different things. And the way that I like to explain it to my patients is that the pelvic floor as a group of muscles is responsible for a lot. There are a lot of things that those muscles have to do from moment to moment, day to day. So it involves anything from bowel, bladder to sexual function, and including the support of your core, like the foundation of your body. And so when something goes wrong or when there's some aspect of the muscle control is not readily available, it is going to cause issues in any one of those areas, bowel, bladder, sexual function, or core stability. So there's just a lot of things that can be affected if the pelvic floor is not doing what it needs to do. And that dysfunction is sort of the general term for any one of those things.
So when I hear the term, I hear it in a medical sense or even in a layperson sense, I think of pelvic floor dysfunction. I often think of older women who've gone through childbirth,
right,
who might be postmenopausal or not, but and that may be a common scenario, but it sounds like that's not the only one at all, that in fact anyone can have pelvic floor dysfunction, men included certainly. So I guess, is there a typical patient? I mean, there's probably not.
Right. So, and that is sort of a misconception among patients and some physicians, actually, because yes, that's kind of what we think about. Even as women, we think about, okay, we've had children, we've had that trauma. It's normal to have leakage or issues with bladder potentially after having children because of that trauma. Well, that is a percentage of patients, and it is a common issue, but it's still not a normal situation to be in, to have bladder leakage and not be able to control your bladder, whether you're trying to control emptying or retention or emptying. So that's one demographic. I have treated patients from age 9 to age 92. So there is a wide range of individuals that could have pelvic floor issues related to, like I said, bowel, bladder, or sexual function.
So what are, you sent me some reading material, which I appreciated, in terms of screening for pelvic floor dysfunction, and I noticed there were many, many things that can cause it. I mean, we mentioned childbirth, but there are things that were on that list that's kind of surprised me. Take us through a few of those, if you can.
So some of the more, what we might think of as like mundane items on the checklist would be low back pain. I mentioned earlier that the pelvic floor is responsible for the stability of your core. It's a piece of that core stability, and that's the foundation of your body. So when that, you know, when those muscles are kind of offline or not functioning like they should, it's going to create an instability in the foundation of your body, which can lead to low back pain. Another item that we might not think of as a problem, especially if it happens when we're very young, is a fall on the tailbone. I know, you know, as young people and teenagers, we do things that might not be advisable on occasion. And so, you know, we end up with pain for months because we fell straight down onto a rear end. And sometimes that happens as an adult too. But falling on the tailbone because of the proximity of the tailbone to just the zone of the pelvic floor, and actually the fact that the muscles of the pelvic floor attach directly to the tailbone, or the coccyx more specifically, if there's a trauma to that joint or that the bone itself, in particular a fracture, there can be lots of sort of domino impact of pelvic floor dysfunction over the years, and it might not show itself until later on down the road. That's the thing. We often will say your biography is your biology, because all the things that happen to you over time can lead up to some kind of dysfunction later on down the road.
So pivoting off that point, if your biography is your biology, what you were describing in a way sounded like a cumulative effect. That is, people can have a maybe later in life amalgamation of all of these things that have happened to them that result in some type of pelvic floor dysfunction. But I suppose, I'm guessing here, similarly, you could have kind of a trauma, like an injury, a motor vehicle accident, something like that, that could lead to almost immediate pelvic floor dysfunction. So again, there must be a range.
Absolutely. And that's kind of why that checklist is so helpful, because it's, you know, several items, but it's like if you answer yes to three or more of these things, then you might benefit from a pelvic floor evaluation, you know, an evaluation with a specialist in pelvic floor dysfunction.
So in the article you sent me about screening for pelvic floor dysfunction, it stated that it's very often misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, and it took, I think it was 10% of the people with pelvic floor dysfunction actually eventually got a correct diagnosis. So why is it so hard to figure out, and what are some things I guess listeners could watch out for if they think they might fall into this category?
So that's exactly right. I mean, that sometimes the time to correct diagnosis of pelvic floor dysfunction is on the scale of years as opposed to, you know, weeks or months. And the reason, I suppose that the reason that it is so challenging to diagnose is because it can kind of masquerade as a whole lot of different things. Like I said, the pelvic floor is responsible for so many functions, but all of those functions are so important that a physician is going to try to rule out all the worst possibilities. So, you know, for example, if there's issues with emptying the bladder, like complete emptying of the bladder, then that could be a neurological problem. So they want to rule out something going on with the nerves of the spine. And so, you know, a person goes through test after test to rule things out, but meanwhile, they're still being challenged by the symptoms that they're having, especially with pelvic pain, because when there's musculoskeletal dysfunction in the pelvis, it can create very similar pain patterns that something like a cyst on the ovary, or, you know, even appendix issue or gallbladder problems. And sometimes it's even just like a gastrointestinal upset that, you know, you got to be checked for IBS or recommended medication for something like a diagnosis of IBS. And so, and maybe some of those things are helpful, but they just don't get to the actual source of the problem because it's more treating a symptom than it is treating the root.
I guess you mentioned that the pelvic floor is responsible for so much, and you talked about urinary function, bowel function, sexual function, and so those are important functions for everybody. And so it can be any one of those functions that are dysfunctional or a combination thereof.
Absolutely.
That could lead someone. And is it automatic that if you had, say, a bowel or bladder problem, by definition, does that make it a pelvic floor dysfunction? Or is it, if there's a specific cause, then you get more specific about what the cause is, and then, you know, you don't really get into the realm of pelvic floor dysfunction and therefore pelvic rehab.
Right. My philosophy is that we are one body. You know, all of our systems are interconnected. And so, you know, my instinctual answer to that question is like, well, yeah, there could be some pelvic floor dysfunction involved because everything's connected. But I would say that if you have problems controlling the emptying or retention of your bowels or bladder, yes, that is pelvic floor dysfunction, kind of almost textbook. could there be other issues involved, like you know, food sensitivities or things that are disrupting your gut that you know your gut doesn't like, causing something like loose stools that are difficult to hold? Yes, there could be other things, but retention of bowel and bladder, ease of emptying of bowel and bladder are definitely have a connection into pelvic floor dysfunction. And, you know, a person with those issues could benefit from evaluation with a pelvic floor physical therapist.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Becky Wilcox, who is a physical therapist. She works at Physical Therapy of Tulsa, and she's a specialist in a therapy called pelvic rehabilitation. And we're talking about pelvic floor dysfunction, which is a surprisingly common condition and really result of many, many types of medical conditions. And one, Becky, that I wanted to ask you about in particular is in the article that you shared with me, which is something called interstitial cystitis, which is often underdiagnosed, misdiagnosed, and then winds up being very difficult to treat. Tell us what that is and, you know, what people should look out for.
Right. So interstitial cystitis, besides being difficult to say, it does have another name these days, which is much easier, is painful bladder syndrome. Essentially, it is what it sounds like, and even the root cause of it is not well understood. Some medical professionals believe that it is like a histamine response in the lining of the bladder. In short, it's an inflammatory response in the bladder that can become very painful. It can be aggravated by things that you eat or drink, and that would increase that inflammatory response and pain response in the bladder. It causes pain with urination. It can cause pain with filling of the bladder. In short, anything related to the function of the bladder, whether it's filling, emptying, or ingestion of liquids, can cause pain. The pelvic floor treatment, pelvic floor rehab is kind of the first line, most conservative treatment for interstitial cystitis. And it is a fantastic treatment option because what we can do as PTs is kind of unlayer all the things that can add pain to the situation. In other words, when there's pain in the bladder area, the muscles around that area have a tendency to kind of spasm up and guard up around an area of pain. That can happen anywhere in the body. So as those muscles spasm up and tighten up, and maybe even the person's posture starts to change because they're in pain most of their day, the muscles that are shortening and tightening will become painful with use as well. Maybe they develop trigger points in their inner thigh muscles or their lower abdominal muscles, their hip flexor muscles. Combining that with whatever activities that they are trying to do on a daily basis, it just can create a big pile-on effect of pain symptoms. And so the physical therapy helps to address the layers of pain on top of pain on top of pain. So stretching exercises for the tight muscles. I use a manual treatment technique called dry needling. It's an acupuncture needle to treat trigger points. Trigger points in a muscle can create pain when that muscle is being activated. And so if we can release and relieve some of the tension in that system, then it's going to relieve some of the pain with activity. And so we're not necessarily treating the lining of the bladder with physical therapy, but we're treating all of the pain elements that can layer on top of the inflammatory response of the bladder.
So the bladder is a muscle. I mean, it's a specialized form of what's called smooth muscle. And so if it acts up or has this inflamed response, it can be unique to that organ. But then you're pointing out essentially that there can be all these secondary coupled responses to where a person's body in the vicinity of the bladder starts to react or perhaps overreact or spasm. And so it sounds like the pelvic rehabilitation therapy is really about uncoupling those responses.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so you mentioned dry needling. What are some other techniques that are used in general with pelvic floor dysfunction? I mean, so is there strengthening exercises as well? And do you have I'm picturing like special ultrasound machines. That's always a thing that gets used in all kinds of
physical therapy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some pelvic floor PTs use a device. It's just kind of generally a technique, but there are devices to create a biofeedback image or just a visual feedback for, you know, what the muscle is doing. So yes, there are strengthening exercises, and there are just too many to even count, but strengthening specific to the pelvic floor muscles can be done with the assist of biofeedback so that the patient can kind of understand what their muscles are doing, especially in an area that they're less, typically people are less familiar with when they come in for pelvic floor therapy. They're not thinking of those, that area as a group of muscles. And so biofeedback is a helpful tool. Another thing that we as a clinic focus on very heavily is breathing more efficiently. That's something that sounds really simple and maybe kind of abstract, but the pelvic floor muscles and the diaphragm are mechanically coupled in a good way. So when one moves, the other should also move. They sort of work like a piston, if you can imagine. The diaphragm is the top and the pelvic floor is the bottom of that piston. And so when one is kind of stuck and doesn't move well, the other is going to have a tendency to get stuck and not move well. And so more efficient breathing pattern is very important, and very important for pelvic floor function, digestive function, calming that autonomic nervous system, that sympathetic fight or flight response, and facilitating the rest and digest, that parasympathetic response. So breathing covers as many resolutions of the pelvic floor dysfunction as there are dysfunctions. I mean, it's so simple, but yet so critical for the best core and pelvic floor function.
I always found the muscular anatomy of the pelvis pretty complicated. I mean, it sounds like that is playing into this, but do you use a lot of anatomical models when you're offering therapy to patients to sort of help them visualize what it is they're trying to relax or work on?
I do. I of course, enjoy like kind of geeking out on all of the musculature and explaining the function and whatnot. But yeah, anatomy text is kind of the best visual. We do have actually a pelvic model that allows the patient to visualize at least the fact of, you know, where the muscles are on the underside of the pelvis. But I find that if I can kind of talk them through the relationship and the coordination of the muscles with these other areas of the body, that they definitely have a good understanding of the fact that it's, you know, it's all one, we're all one system, we're all one body. I will also say that, as you mentioned, the musculature of the pelvis being complicated, there's just a lot packed in to a very small area. And another set of muscles that comes into play significantly with pelvic floor dysfunction are the hip muscles. So there are a lot of deep, small hip muscles that are actually easily palpated or addressed with manual treatment techniques internally. And that is part of a pelvic floor physical therapy assessment. And so those deep hip muscles, you know, if the person comes in with pelvic floor dysfunction with a history of a labral tear, a hip labral tear, or just chronic hip pain in general, then if we work on their pelvic floor muscles and strength and balance and relaxation where there needs to be relaxed muscles and strength where there needs to be strength, then their hip dysfunction improves or resolves. So when you get the chance and the time, like we do as physical therapists, to explain all those things, it's just the patients always kind of come back with being so grateful that someone is able to finally explain it. You know, I know that if they've seen their doctor, they might not necessarily get as much time to explain their symptoms or receive the education that they would like about what's going on. But we are fortunate to have the time to spend to both, you know, listen and educate on what's going on. So we're grateful for that.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Becky Wilcox, who's a physical therapist. She works at Physical Therapy of Tulsa. You can learn more about them at PT of Tulsa. That's one word, ptoftulsa.com. And Becky Wilcox specializes in pelvic floor rehabilitation or pelvic rehab, which is kind of unusual. And Becky, is you're the only person, I'm told, you're the only person in Tulsa who does this, or maybe one other person?
There are a handful of us.
There are a handful.
Yeah,
okay.
And coming out of school now, we're growing slowly as a pelvic PT community, but at our clinic, Physical Therapy of Tulsa, we actually have three pelvic floor PTs, including myself. So, you know, like I said, it's a growing community, but it is quite small still.
But is there a perceived shortage? I mean, you could use a lot more
yes.
folks to do this.
Okay. There is no competition for patients in Tulsa, especially. There are more pelvic PTs, I would say, kind of along the coasts and in other larger metropolitan areas, but there's definitely no shortage of patients.
So what, I mean, is there a, what's the wait time? I mean, just, I know you can't really say, but is it a long, like to get in to see you, would it take 3 months or something?
There was a time when I was by myself at this clinic as a pelvic floor therapist that was unfortunately for the patients waiting, that was the case. And it definitely depends on the time of year and insurance deductibles and whatnot, but because insurance does cover the treatment of pelvic floor dysfunction. But at this point in time at our clinic, we're looking at a week or two, and we try to get people in as quickly as possible. We get many of our referrals from physicians, but with, you know, social media as an opportunity for people in the community to kind of chit chat about, like, hey, I have this issue, and, you know, I saw this pelvic therapist and it was a great experience. So we're getting a lot more self-referral patients than we used to, which is exciting, and it's kind of amping up our push on social media also.
So you mentioned that pelvic floor dysfunction is something that happens in men too. Is there a preponderance of women that are your patients, but like a growing number of men? Or
I would say it's not necessarily growing. Some might say that men are a little less, they do a little bit less seeking medical help unless it's just absolutely necessary. And that's oftentimes the patients that we see, we're kind of like, well, you know, you're my last hope, or I didn't know what else to do, so I thought I'd give this a try because I'm having a lot of trouble. And so I would say the predominant diagnosis that we do see men for is post-prostatectomy. So they've had their prostate surgically removed, usually because of a cancer diagnosis, and maybe they have difficulty controlling urine stream, or usually it's the opposite issue that they have before surgery. Oftentimes like an intermittent stream or slow stream is the issue there, but after they've had that prostate removed, they have control issues. And so it's one of those things that I would think especially men don't talk about, because women sometimes have a hard time talking about it, but it's an embarrassing issue, and they don't know that there is help for it. There can be resolution to it. And so unfortunately, we don't see quite as many men as we do women for that very same issue. But the ones that we do see, they are thrilled with the change that they see and the resolution that they find.
So, I mean, do you have good success with, I mean, that's a good example, post-prostatectomy, incontinence, or bladder control?
Yes. And, you know, I've treated men who are 6 weeks post-op and they're kind of starting from scratch. And I've treated men who are 10 years post-op and they've dealt with it for all this time. But we have great success resolving the issue no matter how long it's been.
So this is going to be a general question, which, I mean, obviously it's going to depend on the condition, but are there conditions for which pelvic floor rehabilitation can work, like a single or two treatments, and then that's it, and the patient is sufficiently coached or trained and can now self-advocate or be self-efficacious? Or are there, and I imagine there are probably situations that require, you know, ongoing treatment for weeks to even months.
Right. The answer to that, to your first question, absolutely. Especially if it's a fairly straightforward situation of we just had surgery, we're having bladder control issues, and whether it's men or women, you know, if it's fairly uncomplicated, then a visit or two giving you kind of the basic tools, that is, that's been my experience, that there can be great success just knowing what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. There are plenty of situations where the treatment is ongoing. In particular, pelvic pain issues that are sort of more of a mystery to investigate and kind of figure out all of the components and work through each of those, especially if there's a lot of trauma in the person's history, physical trauma to, you know, joints or fall on the tailbone, things like that.
Becky, I wonder if we could close by having you tell us a little bit about your personal story. How did you become interested in physical therapy, or even specifically, how did you get interested in this additional discipline of pelvic floor rehabilitation? Where did you learn about it?
I got into physical therapy because I've always had a passion for exercise, and I didn't necessarily see myself working so one-on-one closely with people, but I'm certainly glad that I ended up in this situation. But when I was in school at University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center here in Tulsa, I was able to take an elective course in women's health. We had an instructor at OU, Carol Andrew. She's kind of our OG of pelvic floor physical therapy in Tulsa. Most everyone knows her name. She taught that elective course, and I was just inspired by her stories of teaching people very simple things that were absolutely life-changing for them. And, you know, it seems simple to me now in terms of, you know, just pieces of information that make a world of difference to somebody's physical well-being. You know, the fact that these things aren't as readily discussed, and you can't just sit and talk about your pelvic floor dysfunction over brunch with your friends, it leaves people feeling very alone. And even sometimes when they bring it up to their physician, if the physician's not familiar, or they just don't really have a lot of good advice besides running tests and whatnot, it feels very scary to not know what's going on. And again, her stories of being able to be the person that can make that change for someone. And honestly, the most touching stories that she would tell were of couples who were unable to be intimate because of the woman having pelvic pain issues. And then, you know, she gets flowers months down the road because they're pregnant, and you know, they're excited to share with her that they are expecting a child. So that was definitely my inspiration. And as soon as I started the studies and the process of becoming specialized, it was verified that this is what I wanted to do.
Becky Wilcox, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Becky Wilcox is a physical therapist and certified pelvic rehabilitation practitioner at PT of Tulsa. You can learn more about them at ptoftulsa.com. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWDS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.